This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Nā mai, haere mai, kia ora tēnā koe, Free FM 89.0, independent community media. This is Cosmopolitan News and Views. Welcome to Sunday. Kirikiri Roa, Hamilton, the world, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Lots to get through in the next couple of minutes, so let's go. Column comment, the opinion is mine, and I quote, I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black. Now she wants to be known as black. Donald Trump to the National Association of Black Journalists convention in Chicago. So I didn't know, is she Indian or is she black? A racial bigot who wants to be president of the United States, confronted by ABC's Rachel Scott, who's African American. I saw the interplay between the two. Sweaty, uncomfortable. That was Donald Trump. He didn't want to be there. And he was again questioned on Kamala Harris and the question of race. Maybe Trump should look at his own backyard. Origins German, father and grandfather. Even his own family have turned against him. Fred Trump III will be voting for Harris. Fred calls him, and I quote, an atomic crazy uncle. The same old show of division as Harris remarked. The Americans deserve better, said Harris. For the record, Asian American, Indian and Jamaican via her parents. The interplay between her and him and Rachel Scott from ABC. ABC. Fake news, said Trump. Others say Trump, and I quote, a relic of a racist past. So what now? We have to move on. Next month, Trump is to be sentenced. People will have to wait for a few more weeks. Yes, Trump doesn't like to be confronted by what he calls fake news. According to many, Trump is stupid and racist. August 4, 2024 to go. August 4, 2024. Today, 1923, the opening of the 8.5 kilometre Otera Tunnel. The Christchurch to Greymouth Transalpine Railway.
Thank you. The next folk song is taken from a selection called Malice in Wonderland and is dedicated to the Minister of Transport.
New Zealand Prime Minister David Longhi, 1984-89, born 1942. He died in 2005.
Ooh, let's get real, real gone for change, huh?
Royal News, 1900, the Queen Mother, born. She died in 2002 at 101.
Years through the war, she's a miracle.
Must be the nation's favourite grandma.
Oh, she's a beautiful person. Amazing.
1962 this day, actress Marilyn Monroe dies of a drug overdose. In 1944, the arrest of Anne Frank, betrayed by an informer and later died in a concentration camp. Other family members also died. Anne's father survived the war. Actor, trumpeter Louis Armstrong, born this day in 1901. He died in 1971.
Hello, darling. This is Louis, darling. It's so nice to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, darling. I can tell, darling. You still growing, you still growing.
Singer, songwriter, producer, duet with Nancy Sinatra, Lee Hazlewood, died this day in 2007.
Did you ever?
Not so much that you could know.
Made how many?
8 or 9.
Will you do it anymore?
As soon as you walk out the door.
Well, I just wonder, did you ever?
And number 5, New Zealand, August 4, 1970, 54 years ago. Boy soprano, David Curtis.
Wow.
Love.
Free FM 89.0, independent community media. This is Cosmopolitan News and Views, the old K-Star 1950s hit of Wheel of Fortune, that version by New Zealand boy soprano David Curtis. It's 9 minutes to one. One YW Hamilton, established in 1960, broadcast on 1140 kilohertz, broadcasts non-commercial programming over the Waikato. The late Clyde Baxter and the late Tony Wynn brought us cricket and rugby commentaries on this frequency. Established, the station would be soon become part of the national program, later RNZ National. 1YW broadcast from Elmer Street Studios alongside 1ZH and 1XH. Well, satellites. We're regulars at the Starlight Ballroom on Anglesey Street in Hamilton. Ivor, a.k.a. Paul Fisher, 1939 2014. Fisher, in 1967, moved to Australia, returning in 1970. The Satellites also recorded with local band The Retaz, recording Daddy Cool. The band played at the Satellite Ballroom. Remember who it was? It's now Pilates. It's near the old Z, the former Z station. It's in that area where the Anglesey Tree Clinic is. Well, they recorded, as I said, and they opened, they played three nights a week at the old Satellite there down the street there, 1960-62. The Starlight Ballroom also had Andy Shearer in the band. Remember Andy Shearer? He says his music works is still going today. He's deceased, but his name lives on. And, of course, they've got the music bars outside the store, but it's been covered somewhat by a couple of bus things. And Starlight Ballroom was demolished in 1991. From 1959, here is the late Ivor, a.k.a. Paul Fisher, and the Satellites with Call on Cupid.
Well, I saw a crazy chick walking down the street. I said, ooh, pretty baby, why the steady beat? She said, oh, wow, what a square, don't you dig the scene? Daddy Cool's playing his piano machine. Daddy who?
Daddy Cool.
Daddy who?
Daddy Cool.
Daddy Cool. Daddy Cool. Daddy Cool.
Yeah, Free FM 89.0, independent community media, made another boo-boo there. That was actually the Retaz with the Satellites and the late Paul Ivor Fisher and Daddy Cool. Yeah, they're all building up all these mistakes this afternoon. All the faux pas. Sorry about this. Anyway, it is 4 minutes to one. We were just mentioning the singer, songwriter, producer Lee Hazlewood. Not only he produced for Nancy Sinatra, Frank Sinatra produced for him, and of course they were connected, of course, with Sinatra's record label Reprise Records. Hear the interplay between Nancy Sinatra and the late Lee Hazlewood, who died this day. Try this one. It's 4 to 1.
How many?
8 or 9.
Will you do it anymore?
As soon as you walk out the door.
Well, I just wonder, did you ever?
All the time. Could I fix you once more?
No thanks, I just had one.
Then how?
Just fine.
Is there any special way?
Oh no, whatever you say.
Well, I just wondered, have you ever?
All the time.
No, he's taller and more handsome.
Yeah, but is he old?
Oh, no, he's young and is in his prime.
Does your father know, I'll bet?
I haven't told him yet.
I just wondered, do you ever?
All the time. But just
that would be much harder.
Oh, then how about?
Well, are you sure that you don't mind?
Hey, I know just the thing for us.
Nah, I'm afraid I'll miss my bus.
Well, I just wondered, have you ever?
All the time.
Louis, darling, it's so nice to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, darling, I can tell, darling. You still growing, you still going strong. I feel the room swaying while the band's playing one of our old favorite songs from way back when. So take a rap, fellas, find an empty lap, fellas, darling, never go away again. Thank you.
the broom, swayed by the band's playing one of our old favorite songs from way back when. So, golly gee, fellas, have a little faith in me, fellas. Golly, never go away, promise you never go away.
FM 89.0, independent community media. Hello, Dolly, Louis Armstrong. It's birthday today, actually. Yeah, he was born this day in 1900, along with the Queen Mother. It's 1 minute past 1 o'clock. And ahead of Hello, Dolly, Did You Ever? With Nancy Sinatra and the late Lee Hazlewood. We might find another Nancy Sinatra song that was produced by Lee Hazlewood before we go at 2 o'clock this afternoon. It is 1 minute past one. If you do want to comment, yeah, our studio phone is 0508 893 0508 893 733. 058 893 0508 893 733. Three, if you want to give us a ring between now and 2 o'clock this afternoon, or even after two, you can make comments on the show. Right, let's get back to what we were doing before with Paul Fisher. And I found the right track. This is Paul Fisher and the Satellites. They were the resident band of the Starlight Ballroom on Anglesey Street near the courthouse. Oh, those days are long gone. Did you ever go to that particular venue? Here is Paul Fisher and the Satellites.
Well, I love every dimple in your dimple cheek. I know that you could love me too. I feel like falling in love. I'm gonna fall on Cupid. Well, baby, I'll give you all the love I've got. I know that you could love me too. I feel like falling in love. I'm gonna fall on Cupid. Well, there's a big bright moon shining. Just to give us a show. Well, I love every twinkle in your eyes. I know that you could love me too. I feel like falling in love. I'm gonna call on Cupid. Well, there's a big, bright moon shining up above. The nights were made for making love. So come along and be my little turtle dove. And I'll call on Mr. Cupid just to give us a shove. Well, I love every twinkle in your eyes of blue. I know that I could love you too.
Thank you.
FM 89.0, independent community media, cosmopolitan news and views, Mel Driscoll and Bruce Scott. Between now and 2 o'clock, along with guests, that is New Zealand former boy soprano David Curtis. That's the Japanese version of a song he wrote himself called Take Your Leave. Talking about Mel, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, and we welcome David and Adrian Wright, joined in the New Zealand Concert Bands Association annual festival this weekend. Somewhere in the mists of time, evolved humans' liking for music and the instruments to produce it. While some take up forms of percussion, others adopt the bagpipes. What's your choice and why, Adrian?
My choice of instrument was the trumpet, and my choice of interest was the trumpet, because I like the sound of it. I started playing at the age of 30 and was self-taught.
Tell us about the North Shore Concert Band.
North Shore Concert Band has been going about 55 years now.
Is age or experience any barrier?
Would need to have grade 3 reading and playing ability to be in the band. Age is certainly not a limit. Certainly the upper age isn't a limit. We've had players 92 when they left the band.
Art knows no bounds, any age, creed or colour. Some of us have the innate desire to express our feelings or perception in artistic ways. When did someone see your talent emerging?
In art, probably the first time was as a 5-year-old. I did a cartoon which was published in the Auckland Star on a Saturday, I seem to think it was. I also had an aunt who was an artist who was my first teacher, taught me colour use mainly, then had formal lessons at the age of 9.
And it's led to continuing your artistic talent expressed in ways that reaches others' homes?
I've put on a couple of exhibitions in more recent times.
What form of art do you prefer?
Landscape, still life, oil on, water mixable oil is the one I use on canvas.
So between art and the concert bands, life is fairly full?
Very full, yes.
You also, together with your husband, are interested in conservation.
Yes, we had property with a very good bush on it in Derry Flat, which the local community did a lot of conservation work, including us, possum control.
Life offers other opportunities to develop expertise. There's a man you met who left a penniless background in the Northern Highland Ireland homeland to make a mint of money as a businessman. Huey Green.
Yes, that's right. I did meet Huey Green at the Kumu stock sales. I first went there to buy cattle with a friend. I bought the first two heifer calves out of the housekeeping money. Sold the two and bought four and so on. But I learned to buy cattle quite well by watching Huey Green and how he chose his cattle.
And early in an unfolding era of gender equality, you found a niche teaching schools to pass on what you already knew, but under Task Force Green.
Yes, my father-in-law had taught me how to build a farm fence. I didn't have the strength myself to do it, but when we needed help on the farm to build fences, my mother-in-law employed this man on Task Force Green. Well, I seem to remember she paid some of the wages, and he learnt the skill, learnt to be quite a good fencer.
As a boy who grew up on a farm myself at Kaipaki, watching my father putting his shoulder and put all those fence posts in, et cetera, putting the wire up, it's a tough job. Did you have to get stuck into some of those Task Force Green people to get their mind back on the job, or did some of them just escape, they never came back?
We only had the one man under the Task Force Green, and he never chose to escape, did he?
It's an example of how things can work out. There's a tiny location, not marked on many maps, where the road seems to peter out at the edge of the map, disappearing into bush or beyond. Te Huinga, clinging on to the vestige of civilization, a two-teacher country school. Tell us more.
Yes, we went to Huinga as my husband David was a newly trained teacher, and we had to do country service, and we had a choice of about five places, didn't we, and chose Huinga. I partly chose it because in Taranaki I saw opportunities to ride my horse, which I took down there, and that did work out well. Big sheep stations, which I used to ride through.
Having gone to a country school myself out in Kaipaki, those country schools, they equip you for the world, probably?
You'd have to answer that one.
David,
former teacher, those country schools, they equip the children for lessons in life?
I think they do, or did. I feel that the ones that I taught, hopefully got something out of what I was doing and managed to make something of their lives.
You stem from a family of many uncles who took up potato growing, setting an example for the rewards of hard work to lead to owning their own farms.
Yes, that's right. I often wonder whether they're actually Irish in disguise, but no, I don't think they were, but anyway, that's how they all started, was growing potatoes and
in the Manawatu.
Yeah, the Manawatu.
Way in the back blocks.
Yeah, it's pretty much in the back blocks, yep. Yes.
So in growing up in the country, was the lure of the seacoast irresistible?
Absolutely, or any water. I mean, we spent a lot of our youth trying to make canoes out of tins of sheets of iron, but you can almost hear the sea from where we lived in the Manawatu, but we couldn't quite see it. But our first sight of the sea when we got there was magic.
You like fishing?
Sometimes, yes.
You grew up in the country, but you liked the seacoast. Did you
Absolutely.
Think that you had a future out on the high seas?
Not initially. In fact, Adrian introduced me to sailing later on after we got married. But, I certainly enjoyed that once we got going on that.
Is there anything you haven't done?
Yes.
Well, when you think of the sea, think of Christmas Eve, going back a few years. A Christmas Eve.
Yes, well, that's rather interesting, actually. It's got a little bit of a backstory to it. I grew up with Adrian's dad, actually, always sort of chanted this mantra, steam gives way to sail. In fact, my grandparents did, who were landlubbers as well, and I sort of took that on board. And we bought a small yacht, and on our maiden voyage with it, we were crossing the Rangitoto Channel, and way in the distance we noticed the steamer. And I thought, oh, not to worry, steam gives way to sail. And we headed across the channel, and the steamer got nearer and nearer and nearer, and there was no sign of him actually giving way to sail. So in the end, we decided that on this occasion, sail better give way to steam, and luckily we did, or we'd have been run down.
Who would be in the wrong?
We would have been in the wrong.
Because?
The ship was in a shipping channel, and in the channels, steam doesn't give way to sail.
Because?
Well, steamers can't manoeuvre in channels very well, so...
Yep, that Rangitoto Channel right in front of what they, that mountain they used to call the coat hanger. It's a very busy shipping line. You've got naval vessels, the ferries, everything's out there. So you were lucky.
We were lucky, yes.
And when we think of the holiday time, the summer, it's a time of good weather, we trust.
Yes, well, generally it's supposed to be. We survived that trip. And then we undertook another trip, which was a bit of an interesting one as well. We had a friend who had a well-known New Zealand boat, Nataki, built back in the 1930s by an unemployed guy who got fired from his job and decided he'd build a yacht and sail around the South Pacific. And his name was Johnny Ray. Well, our friend bought that boat, and they were going to Whangarei this particular year, so we thought, oh, well, why not go with them? We'll go with them.
A good harbour?
Yes, well, it if you get there. but we set off from Kawau Island about 6 o'clock in the morning, and we were still rookies, really. We didn't really have the proper equipment. They didn't have a radio. In those days, you could have either a radio or a boat. You couldn't have both. The radios were just too expensive. But I think we had life jackets and maybe a compass. And that
two
was about
small
it.
Children.
And two small children under five.
Your children.
Yes.
Precious.
So we set off up the coast, and we figured we could see Whangarei Heads from Kawau Island, which is an absolute impossibility. In actual fact, we were heading for, first of all, Great Barrier, I think, then Little Barrier, then Bream Tail, and... We were lost, yeah. Finally, we spotted the Heads, and we said, that's the Heads. But in the meantime, pretty much a gale had sprung up, and we were driven into the coast, and we had to try and beat our way back out to get into Whangarei Harbour.
An easterly wind... What time of year?
Christmas.
Eve.
Christmas Eve. Yes, yes. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we eventually arrived in Whangarei Harbour in a pretty bad state.
What about the conditions aboard that? Were you worried about that, Adrian, as the storm, it was an easterly wind, I believe?
Yes, I did become quite anxious before we got into the harbour. We saw a sizeable fishing boat, and I suggested to David that maybe they could tow us in, but he chose to be independent, and we managed to get in, as he said. But
The right decision?
It probably was the right decision, considering once we got into Whangarei Basin, other yachts were saying that that fishing boat had tipped over out there. So, yes, I'm not sure how they managed after that.
Yeah. Well, what year are we talking about with that gale out in that near Great Barrier Island?
I think it's somewhere in the early 70s.
Well, I've got a bit of audio to play because we're going back to the 1960s when a certain radio station had trouble in that particular area. Listen to this.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is Paul Einem on board the MV Tiri. Mayday, mayday. We are on the rocks. We estimate our position to be near Whangaparapara Harbour on Great Barrier Island, on the western side of Great Barrier Island. Mayday, mayday, mayday.
You know that area?
Yes.
Very dangerous. That was Radio Hauraki on the rocks, and
yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So you've been in other gales?
Oh yes, yes. I did a yacht race from Whangarei to Noumea 1 year, and we ran into horrendous gales.
You felt more at ease in coping with situations of dire danger by then?
I wouldn't say that, but I don't know whether you ever developed that state of mind. Maybe some do. I didn't. I was always a little bit frightened of the sea, and I probably think that's a good idea, to be just a little bit frightened of it.
And when you find yourself frightened, especially if you have your loved ones on board, does it make you wish you'd stayed at home?
Not really, no, because once you get home, the first thing you do is to vow to put the boat on the market the next day, and you never do, and you go out again and do it again and again and again.
You decided that, as with teaching, you decided that you would do the formal requirements so that it became a career.
Yes.
With seafaring, one can do the same.
Yes.
How and why?
Oh, you mean make a career out of it?
You did the yacht masters exams.
Yes, and I oddly enough, the Marine Department allows you to add up your yachting time, and allows you to sit the very basic commercial ticket, which back in those days was boatmaster and local launch master.
Has that come in handy?
It did, because we went down to Fiordland to do a bit of work on... I'd had enough of teaching for a while, and we went down there to work on tourist boats.
Well, first of all, we walked the Milford Track and loved the environment down there. Friends took us over to Manapouri. They were going to go on the Manapouri trip. We didn't go because we'd been on boats for a lot of the time before that. But we went into the office there and said, well, would there be any jobs going on the lake here? And we were sent to the manager of the company, who said, yes, come back in August and we'll employ you.
Yes, that's what we did. And for the first year, I used my launch master's ticket to skipper these tourist launches. The second year, I had enough commercial time to sit what was then called a commercial launch master, which now has become what they call an inshore skipper's ticket, which allows me to skipper a vessel up to 800 tonnes, 50 miles off the coast of New Zealand. But that was the one when I was working on Spirit of Adventure.
Spirit of Adventure?
Yeah.
A sailing ship?
Yes, it's a square rigger that takes young people out and gives them what is known as sail training. But
a trust, like Outward Bound.
Yes, like Outward Bound, but a little different. It goes a little bit beyond the Outward Bound parameters, and university studies have shown that people that take on these sail training trips develop a lot more resilience than they get out of any other type of outdoor education.
Over the years, going out on the boat brings you, if you're into that, Scouts, the Duke of Edinburgh Award system. That's part of it too.
Yes, that is. We did do that. I think that they've altered the name of that slightly now, but they do all sorts of conservation work, like Spirit of Adventure is allowed to sail into reserves, and the trainees there do cleaning up beaches, testing the water, taking water temperature, and so on. And in the day and age that we're in, with our youth in some difficulty and to some extent, it's a pretty good thing to have, and we should do more of it.
Yep. What do you say about people who go out on these boats, just a party vessel, music, lots of alcohol, and then tragedy occurs? We've had many of those in the last year or so. We had there was a horse trainer from Te Awamutu killed on a boat not so long ago. So what do you say about these people who go out in these boats, full of alcohol and get into serious trouble?
Well, in all of our training, we used to say, and the trainers used to say, sea and the alcohol don't mix. So if you're drinking on the water, it's probably not a good idea at all. But ultimately the responsibility to keep the passengers safe rests with the skipper. That's where the buck stops.
Thinking of the outcomes, you look back at the time when you were down Fieldland Way. Do you think that the foreigners who came as tourists to New Zealand were ever at risk of being subjected to so much tourism that it off-put some of the people with the deepest commitment to environmental questions?
Yes, I think we've got to look at tourism worldwide. Look at Venice, for example. The locals can barely exist in that place because of too many tourists. And I think we've got to watch in this country that we don't end up in the same boat, as it were, because people like to come to New Zealand, and who can blame them?
And I suppose you've seen on Auckland Harbour some of those big multi-hulled yachts that those billionaires like Graham Hart builds. You've probably seen them. Are you jealous of those yachts?
Oh, not really. It's a little strange that at one stage of my life I was involved in training people to work on those types of boats. But I think they'd have to go into the same category as private jets, which in this day and age perhaps is not the best thing for the environment.
For those who can afford to live this exclusive life, is there an attraction about New Zealand's location in relation to the rest of the world?
I think there probably is. I think we've got a beautiful country and beautiful beaches and harbours and a sort of a place for people to get away from it all a bit.
The way that you appreciate the environment, David, is to take the little trees from near your garden.
Yes, well, I think that one of our the things we've got to do to try and combat climate change is plant trees. I don't know how many billion they're talking, hundreds of billions probably. So I think one of the things that Joe Blow, like myself, can do is perhaps plant a few trees. And Adrian and I have been involved in reforesting land since the last 20 years, I guess. But we haven't got that much land now to reforest, but we can pot up these little seedlings and I hand them on to schools and groups that are reforesting areas.
What sort of species?
Well, we're a bit of a monoculture. We've got lacebarks, and we seem to get about a couple of thousand of those a year.
Specialised. I wonder who planted the first lacebark.
Oh, somewhere it's around our house. I don't know.
And Akiak.
Akiak is another one.
Yes, also it's in the hedgerow and thrives in that environment.
Adrian, I'll ask you this question. Do you still play the trumpet?
I do, yes.
When did you last play?
This morning. I did a solo at the Concert Band Festival that's held at the university here over the last couple of days.
Well, let's play a bit from a guy who's celebrating his birthday today. He was a famous trumpeter, actor, singer, whatever, the late Louis Armstrong.
With his trombone, blow it, boy.
One of the great trumpeters of all time, the late, great Louis Armstrong. You like Louis Armstrong?
Yes, definitely. Yes, he was one of the greats.
And thinking back over your lives together, raising your family, and those days on Nataki, and your children, and a voyage that seemed quite perilous to the landlubbers at least, and even you admit, though a seasoned sailor now, David, that back at that time it was causing you some anxiety too, especially when one of your children came up on deck or near where you were to announce?
Yes, well, I'll go back a little bit just to finish off that getting into Whangarei Harbour on that occasion. We arrived on Christmas Eve with all the food and clothes in the bilge and covered in oil. And it was Christmas Eve and Whangarei was in lockdown. I don't think there was even a takeaway, if there was such a thing in those days, open. So we had to sort of go around the local yachting community and try and borrow a stove and some food, and somehow eventually when the laundromats reopened, get the clothes clean and so on. And we eventually survived a couple of weeks up there over the summer, Christmas break, and headed back down the coast towards Auckland. And halfway down the coast, one of our children came on deck and said, "Dad, there's water in the boat." And I said, "Well, there's always water in the boat because you get that's what a bilge is for. It holds the water that seeps in through the stern gland and bits and pieces and so on." But they said, "Dad, this water's hot." I thought, that's a bit unusual.
Hot ocean water?
So I went down below and had a look, and we had a Ford 10 in our little boat at that time, and they were popular small motors for boats. And this Ford 10 had blown a frost plug. So I didn't have another frost plug on board, unfortunately, but I had an old penny, a copper penny. Some of you would remember what they looked like.
We've even got some of them somewhere.
Anyway, one of those fitted in perfectly into the slot, and I fiberglassed that in. It stemmed the leak, and it was still in the boat when we sold it.
Did you escape COVID, both of you? Or
yes, we did.
You were on board, you were safe, you were in a bubble. It was trying times for all.
That particular Christmas, you must be reminded sometimes how things can go very wrong.
Indeed. I guess Murphy's Law always prevails on the sea. If it can go wrong, it will. And the way to get around that is to have yourself properly prepared beforehand.
For some of us, those unusual experiences are likely to arise when we're away from the comforts of familiar ground. Overseas, is there any incident that comes to mind, either on sea or land, that you associate with wherever that place may be geographically? Any particular incident? Which countries did you last visit?
Well, Australia was probably the last country we were in.
Hardly to a New Zealander, a foreign place,
no,
perhaps?
Not really.
We've got half of New Zealand over there.
That's true, yes. Most of my family is over there. Are you thinking of another country in particular, like Thailand?
I'm thinking up, yes, Thailand. Now, there's a place you've visited.
Yes.
By yacht?
No, not by yacht. Mm. I've visited two countries by yacht. New Caledonia, as I say, I did a yacht race to New Caledonia. One year we did a cruise on a big Australian yacht to Tonga. And, yes, that had its moments.
Again, unexpected heavy seas?
No, oddly enough, it was a reasonably calm trip, that one, but we'd got away from the country with not the correct radio on board, so I won't name any names or anything like that. But we had the wrong type of radio, which we couldn't operate properly initially, but mid-ocean, the owner of the boat suddenly collapsed on deck.
Oh, goodness.
And
with yachting, of course, we can't forget the late, great Sir Peter Blake, who did so much for yachting.
Yes.
Did you ever take part in one of the Auckland's New Year regattas?
Yes, we did, but we were working at that time, and on one occasion we were sailing down Auckland Harbour on Regatta Day, and you could just about walk from boat to boat. And we had a group of Americans on board and one New Zealand woman. And as it happened, another boat, I won't name the boat, went past us and they waterbombed us. And unfortunately, they caught this New Zealand woman smack in the face with a waterbomb.
Oh.
Turned out she was a deaf woman, totally deaf, and the owners of the company had forgotten to tell us that she was totally deaf, and she got very upset. But the Americans were wonderful. They looked after her amazingly.
As a teacher, you know the value of geography when we're acquainted with that, especially if later in life we go on to travel outside our realm. But there was one example of someone who carried that example maybe a bit far.
Yes, well, there is a New Zealander. Well, he was actually British, but he came to live in New Zealand. He came from up Kerikeri way there. He loved the sea, but he reckoned boats should be like corks. They should float, they should be light, and they should float, which I think is quite a good
start.
A good way of looking at boats. And he decided that he had about a boat of about 32 feet, I think. And he, first of all, headed down to Cape Horn with that boat, hauled it ashore and spent some time counting birds in the cliffs around Cape Horn. Then he went down to Antarctica with it and spent some time down there. And on his way back up, he was heading to South Africa as a point to stop off when he got rolled over by a massive wave, probably in the Argolis Current,
which
runs off South Africa.
That was life-threatening.
Well, indeed. For 3 months, he just drifted and gradually drifted north, and one day he saw some yachts. So he called out to them, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We're racing." He said, "What are you racing for?" He said, they said, "The America Cup." "Oh," he said. They said to him, where are you from?" "Oh," he said, "Heard Island was my last port of call." They said, "Never heard of that." Anyway, they finally got him into Fremantle, and the New Zealand team New Zealand at the time, 1987 I think it was, looked after him very well, re-rigged his boat, and he managed to get back to New Zealand.
That's what we like to hear, true New Zealand hospitality. What about the school atlas? Is that ever useful to have out in the ocean?
Well, oddly enough that you should mention that, Mel, because some friends of ours used to tell us about a small boat they used to see drawn up on a lawn near their house. And so one day they asked the people in the house whose boat it was. They said, "Oh, it's ours. We sailed out from England in it." I think it was about 18 feet long and had twin keels. And they used a school atlas to navigate by.
Of course, you probably had to tell your students too that Captain Cook made mistakes when he did his famous map of New Zealand. Did you have to tell your students that too?
Yes, well, I mean, for a long time, Cook's maps or charts were used, I think up into the 19th century. They were so accurate, and it was a long time before they were replaced. Yes, he was quite amazing. But spirit of adventure, oddly enough, eventually the aim was to retrace his steps around New Zealand, which they did by 1983, I think.
Did you ever realise that navigational error might suddenly creep up unnoticed?
Yes, it can and does, yes.
An occasion when there was a small island.
Yes, well, we were actually on our way to Tonga, and we had hoped to run radar at night, and unfortunately the power generator broke down. We weren't able to do that. What we should have done and weren't able to get them was the local charts, and we had to use a very large scale chart. And although I went over the what's called the rum line with a magnifying glass, I missed this island.
Missed on the map.
On the map.
You've got, what's happened?
You've got lots of stories. You'll have to come back.
It was about the size of a fly spot on the map. I did see it, yes, but I didn't mention it.
And when did you actually sight it?
We looked back one morning and there it was astern of us.
Please come back and see us another day, because you've got some more stories.
Yes. David and Adrian Wright from the North Shore.
Here we come and we are sailing.
Here we come, we're on our way.
In a boat just called New Zealand.
We're together, that's our way.
One people on the water,
one people on the land.
It's New Zealand all together.
Kiwis working hand in hand.
Sailing away, sailing away.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me.
And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me.
Free FM 89.0, independent community media. We've been remembering Lee Hazelwood today. He produced that duo from Frank and Nancy Sinatra, Something Stupid. Time to go to our American correspondent. Good afternoon, Gary Schofield.
Good afternoon, Bruce. Nice to hear your voice. And just an apology before we go any further. When we were discussing the pronunciation of Kamala Harris, I was incorrect because I had been given advice to say that it's Kamala as in Camelot. And then I looked up what Kamala herself said, and she actually put an O in comma, so it would actually be closer to Kamala Harris. But I know the international media, including yourself, are using Kamala, which is fine, and I'm glad all that confusion is behind the world now.
Well, here's a bit of nostalgia for you. You last week mentioned your late colleague, Connie Lawn.
Yes.
May 14, 1944, April 12, 2018, OMNZ.
A wonderful journalist.
Yep. Well, there was two Connie Lawns in New Zealand. We've got to mention the other one, the racehorse.
Well, that was named after Connie.
Yes.
You know, so she was an extraordinary part of New Zealand life.
Yep.
I had the honour of serving in her audio-video news.
Yep.
And followed the Kosovo conflict for her.
Yep.
And we were dear friends.
Yep. Well, this horse was by Beaufort Sea out of Free Lady. It was trained by Rex Cochrane at Gore in the South Island. It won the South Island Filly of the Year and the South Island Breeders' Stakes. And this was an honorary OMNZ that they gave her.
Because she's American. Certainly.
Yeah, because she's American. Yeah. I just thought I'd better do some research during the week. But we were talking about earlier about the ABC's Rachel Scott, who's African-American, and the treatment she got by Donald Trump at that conference in Chicago. How dare he talk to people like that? That was... Where are the people who are meant to be looking after the media, the people who should be ruling on the media? Like, we've got the Broadcasting Standards Authority, we've got Ofcam in the UK. What has America got?
Well, very good question, as usual, and I also have to do my research during the week to keep up with you as well. And on that score, we have to be careful a little bit, realize it's a very close to an election, everything becomes politicized. So and I like to take the other opposing view,
yes,
just so that we have a balanced,
yeah,
show. This isn't reflective of my own, but in the theme of Connie Lawn, we will present both sides of the story. So I'm not sure that it is a racial comment to inquire or to question about someone's racial identity. I mean, at least it's an issue we could discuss without being called racist. So, because yep. nowadays, racial, how you identify with somebody is like a personal choice, and because it's political, perhaps how you want to make your personal choice can be part of the political discussion, at least, without it being racist. So, yep. And I did hear Trump himself say that he respected both or either Indian or black, you know. So I'm, you know, that one, it's like you have to be careful when there are so many hot potatoes around mm-hmm. in this political thing. But I did notice that, speaking of journalism and the debate, Trump has offered a debate, but on Fox News instead of ABC, and that, I understand, has been declined.
Yeah, no, I think there are rumours, and I saw Midas Media this morning, that Trump accused the ABC of being late to this particular interview, and it was in a hall. It was all these African American journalists, and he blamed ABC, called them fake news, etc., etc. And he said, "Oh, you were late." Well, I think out the back, Mr. Trump was fretting a bit on doing this particular event.
I heard he didn't want to do this particular event. But if he only calls her late, then that's not too bad in the scheme of things. But well, I'm looking at these great and important choices that we're going to have. And I would just, I don't know if you know of Tulsi Gabbard.
No, tell us about it.
So Tulsi Gabbard was one of the possible Trump choices for vice president, and most people don't know that she is actually married to a New Zealander. She's a senator from Hawaii. She's actually a serving officer in the U.S. Armed Forces and wants to be Secretary of Defense, has said that she would like that position. So she might be an interesting person to watch in the future. And also Mark Kelly, who is the possibility of Kamala Harris's vice presidential choice. And, of course, he's the astronaut.
Yep.
And he has a twin, and the twin stayed on Earth. He went into space. And also where he's interesting politically is that he's from Arizona, which is a swing state. So it would be my advice, not that the administration listens to every word I say, but that would be to take Mark Kelly because it's a swing state. It's a purple state, some blue, some red, and it could sway that important swing state to the Democratic Party. And his wife is Giffords, you know, Gabby Giffords, who was unfortunately shot.
Yeah.
And so that has garnered some very strong ideas on gun control.
Yeah.
But anyway, so those are some of the people that I'm looking at for the future. But the other important thing before we move on to anything else is that Trump may be sentenced on September the 18th, which is next month. That could really throw a wrench in the entire works, couldn't it? If he goes to jail.
Yeah. Just a final point, Gary, because we're running out of time.
Yes.
Last week and a couple of weeks ago, I've got to play the song again next week, the Royal Guardsmen who did Snoopy's Christmas, they put out a song called Snoopy for President, and one of the lines was that elephant in the room. So the elephant is the symbol of the Republican Party of America.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And
also, quickly to go on to world events, major conflict potential in the Middle East. There's an elephant in that room, which we're not really discussing, and that is Iran's nuclear program, which Blinken himself has said and expects to have success within weeks. That was weeks ago or less.
Yep.
So, you know, this carrier group that's gone there and the tensions, it will depend on what Iran does, whether or not it gives a casus belli or a justification for any attack on that nuclear program.
Maybe next week, Gary, we'll talk about the return of the American hostages and the prisoner exchange, because they came home and were met by both the president and vice president. We'll have to talk more about that next week.
Well, just one sentence on that. That is usually a prelude, once you have a goodwill gesture from both sides, a prelude to peace. So who knows?
And there's one who's making a big fuss. He's not coming home presently.
I look forward to that discussion next week. Always wonderful to talk.
Thank you, Gary. All the best to Stuart and his partner.
Yes, and one of his close friends is Katie Trigg, who has just won the operatic, the highest prestigious one in the country just a few hours ago.
Speak to you next week.
Yes, bye for now.
Bye-bye. There we are, our American correspondent here at Free FM. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Afternoon.
What's happening in your neck of the woods?
Duane Porter.
Last night there was five stolen recovered vehicles that got recovered. One of them was just down the road where the cops had the tracker dogs out for it. And, so these young teenagers bought that. They try your way off it.
I was in the area just an hour before this happened, having a pie and a sausage roll, and then I went home because I was just sick and tired because I got one of the street people wanted to have a chat to me, and I said no. He just walked away. I just glared at him, so I didn't want to talk to him. So I just moved on and kept eating the pie. So, but. Something has got to be done with these people. They're just wandering around the streets with dogs and yelling and screaming at each other. And, it's a debacle down that area.
But as I say, it's like these young teenagers failed to stop. They're driving on the footpath, going out the wrong side of the road in Victoria Street. They dumped the first car just down the road. And then got spotted by the police, and then they had to track a dog to come out to do the sniffing. And when he got to them, young teenagers said, "Oh, yeah, I was driving the car." Yeah. And that one there was a Toyota. There was actually two. It was a Toyota Aqua and a Toyota Celica. Both of them got stolen. Both of them have been recovered. But the problem is, one of them is not covered by insurance. So what's happened is that once these cars are being processed and everything, that's what's happened. But yeah, as to say, there was four Toyota Celicas, four Toyota Acras, and then there's a five, and then there's one. So what has actually happened was that they. They dumped the first car, jumped in the second car, dumped this one, and then I went and jumped into another one. About 45 minutes after that, the same guys again. So they got whacked out, so appear in court, hopefully they appear in court tomorrow.
I'd love to sit in the back of the court and watch them getting sentenced. One who the judge is on tomorrow.
Well, the point is, the guy, they were 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds.
Yeah, that young. I didn't think they could drive at that age.
Well, the guy admit that he was driving the car, and, so the old cops threw them in the cell for the night.
Yep. And where were the youngsters taken to? Home?
Yeah.
They got arrested.
Yeah. Well, hey, one thing. I have to ask you this. These kids with short legs stealing cars, how do they reach the pedals?
That's right.
They push the seat forward.
One of the real, short with the A word afterwards. I can't say it on the radio, so.
But that's what they do. They push the seat forward. Yeah. And they even use the screwdriver to start the car.
Anyway, well, I've heard of that.
Yeah, more on this next week. Thank you, Duane. Trevor, good afternoon, sir. Trevor's talk.
I've seen no cyclists this week at all. Nothing to report in that area. I'd like to talk about commercials on TV. What gets me, and people write into the TV guide about this too, the most annoying ad that they have on TV, I understand why they have them to pay for the TV productions and license and so on, is that the drag on, and they're not imaginative, they're not creative, there's the same thing, particularly that insurance choice one, or yep. one choice, or whatever.
I see that creepy guy's. I see that creepy guy's gone.
Yeah, there's a creepy woman there now, dressed in green, butting in. And I think, oh, it's okay for them when they first brought it in, but I say that's wearing very thin. And back in the early days of television, commercials were only on screen turned halfway, when the each program was finished and before the next one started. Because nowadays they cut into the program you're watching. And something going on for ages.
Yep.
And I don't know why TV New Zealand is in debt with overwhelmed advertisements.
Well, the other thing is too, after midnight on all channels you've got those infomercials, so...
Oh, yeah.
So would you buy one of those barbecues from those people?
No, not really. I mean, who in their right mind would sit up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning watching infomercials?
Insomniacs, Trevor, insomniacs.
Oh, what a way to go.
Actually, we'll dig out more of those commercials, those old radio commercials next week on the show just to put you in the picture. I've got to go. I've just had a view in the window of Derek and Peter coming in, so we'll leave you with a song from the Crew Cuts. I've been listening to this in a cappella all week. This is called Shaboom.
Hey, da, de, ding, dong, da, ling, da, ling, da, ling. Boom, ba-do, 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 ba-do.
Oh, life could be a dream shaboom, if I could take you up in paradise up above. Shaboom, if you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again.
Oh, life could be a dream.
Shaboom,
if only
shaboom.
All my precious plans would come true.
Shaboom,
if you would let me spend my whole life loving you. Life could shaboom. Be a dream, sweetheart. Now every time I look at you, something is on my mind. If you do what I want you to,
baby, we'd be so far.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love, life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la. Shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la. Shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la. Shaboom, 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 ya la 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 la. Shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la. Shaboom, shaboom, ya la 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 la. Shaboom. Every time I look at you, something is on my mind. If you do what I want you.
Thanks for your company this afternoon again. Join you next week. Look after yourselves. Have a great week.
This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.